acabou de ter com o lote, né?
That was what lies at the heart of this act was to ensure that it promotes spiritual well-being. You know, when you are told that you are inferior and you continuously believe that, that also becomes a problem in terms of you growing up. But also that the act has the power to build our nation and to affirm our diverse cultures with the aim of shaping our national character, but also to celebrate our achievements, because coming from where we come from and to see us sitting here without being in civil war, we need to look at that. But also, again, looking at redressing the past inequalities. Now, I was asked to talk about the impact of heritage sites on tourism development. And I think what we needed to start with was to look at actually what we mean by heritage and what are the heritage resources. Now, when we speak of heritage resources, we're talking of places, we're talking of objects that have cultural significance. And these objects and places, as Sarah, we will have a call to try to say we want to declare Parliament as a heritage site. We have a call in the newspaper and we will say to South Africans, if we have any objection, tell us in 6 days. If not, then we then correct that we are declaring this place or this object as national heritage. Then we give it a plaque or a certificate that indicates that now, from today, this place is going to be a national heritage site. Now, once we declare the site as a national heritage site, then there are rules and regulations. You no longer can do as you please, even if it's your house. If you're living in a house that is 200 years old and we believe that it has significance in the country, and you agree that we declare it, you no longer can change as you please, because now it has the certificate of being a cultural national heritage site. However, due to the history of this country, as we're saying, there are, if you look at sites that have been declared, most of them were buildings. And if you look at those buildings, most buildings have Dutch colonial history. Because when coming from Freestadt, the chairperson was saying, coming from a rondavel, after some time, that rondavel is demolished. So we now, the access, we need to also look at oral traditions that were never kept at before, that are attached to that heritage, so that we open one another. We're looking at historical settlements where people were forcefully removed, and those things also have significance. We can declare them. We're also looking at landscapes and natural features of cultural significance. Yesterday, they spoke a lot about the African natural landscape that we need to look into. And of significance that we also are looking at the heritage sites are graves and burial grounds, especially graves of the founding fathers, graves of people who fought for the struggle, graves of the Boer War. All those, we're looking at them, and we some of those have been declared as heritage sites. The biggest principle around the heritage is that it has generations of moral responsibility to expertise of the national heritage. Professor Zama was talking about instances where communities are not involved in the sites themselves. Now, if communities are not involved when you declare a site, just know that they won't even protect it. Because these sites don't exist in a vacuum. They exist within communities. Therefore, you need to involve them from the beginning before you declare a site. Or they either go there, vandalize, or just don't go and see the value of that. And also the capacity to promote reconciliation, understand and respect, and contribute to unify the African identity. And lastly, to develop skills and capacities of communities involved in this management. In terms of the skills, if you look at the heritage sites that we have, you find that the tour guides come from the communities and say, my job. The tour guides come from the community itself, because they know the history better than anybody else who comes in that community. Now, in 2011, the Department of Tourism developed a national strategy for heritage tourism. And the strategy really was to integrate culture and heritage into mainstream of tourism. And come to South Africa and say we want to go to Zululand because of, we want to go to Northwest because of, we want to go to Haskukuni because of, and that's linked to the culture and the heritage of the area. And this is an opportunity for local communities to participate in tourism development. Now, a heritage site. When you speak of a heritage site, you speak of places that have archaeological or historical significance. And they have been preserved and they are open for public visitation. I know yesterday, I mean, the issue was around people paying to go to those areas, and sometimes it becomes difficult because they might not have money to go and pay. And this, they include museums, some of them include intensive centers, and they exhibit trails with information on signs or brochures, and they've got staff members who will provide information and tours around the center. Heritage tourism then includes these sites, because you cannot, it can't be on its own. It has to include the sites that have been declared as heritage sites, as well as ideas and methods for managing, promoting, and interpreting the sites, as well as discussions about concerns with continued protection and public access. Once the site has been declared and tourists start flocking there, what comes to mind is that will we be able to preserve the site? Because now there will be traffic of people coming and going. How will we manage to ensure that they do not destroy what has made us to declare the site the heritage site? Now, UNESCO defines a heritage site as a site that has exceptional universal value, and it is protected and preserved against threats of changing social and economic conditions and natural decay, which means then that once the site has been declared, there should be money to preserve the site. There were concerns last year already around Robben Island that is deteriorating. And it's deteriorating because if there's no money to continue to preserve the site, and a heritage building is not just like another building. You can't just call anybody to come and conserve. You have to call a specialist in the built environment who will ensure that they do not remove whatever heritage is in the building. So that itself needs a lot of money. So they, we need to have money to ensure that we continue preserving this our heritage sites. Now, heritage sites in South Africa, SARA is a national body, grade, what we call grade one sites. Grade one sites are sites that have national significance. Then provinces also have, they also are grading, the sites that have provincial significance. But even local governments do have sites that have of local significance. We find that only in that community they know about the sites. They should also present the site. And they relate to places associated with oral tradition, graves and burial grounds, ancestral graves, graves of traditional leaders, or victims of conflict in wars against them. I've already mentioned around the sites of national provincial sites and local sites, and they are mixed in terms of natural and cultural sites. We also are a country that has 8 World Heritage sites. Besides our sites that we've got national, provincial, local, we do have those 8 that are World Heritage sites. And then when sites are, I said a thing here, yeah, Table Mountain here. When sites are heritage sites, what it means is that they now even have international flavor, they're no longer South African, because anybody around the world, they want to identify with that site, because it's a World Heritage site. Now, as a country, even though we are looking at domestic market, but because we've got these World Heritage sites, we need to ensure that we put money and preserve and conserve them for South Africans, for future generations, but also to bring economic growth in the country. These are our World Heritage sites from Robben Island, Smangaliso, Katama, Cradle of Mankind, the Dome, and all that. I think what's critical is that while the Department of Environmental Affairs, while the Department of Tourism put money in these sites. They should also put money in these sites that are away from the public eye, that are mostly in the rural areas, like Makungubi, where if you go to Makungubi, we went to Makungubi in March, and there were floods in Limpopo. Just getting into the site was impossible. The road was off, so you could not get it into the site itself. So I think what people are talking about in terms of Instagram yesterday is critical, that we need to also put more work in our roads in Zanzibar so that tourism continues. These are some of our heritage sites that are in the remote areas. They are in most of our provinces, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Northwest, Eastern Gauteng. Now, what are the benefits of a heritage site? Okay? The benefits of a heritage site is that immediately, once a site has been declared a heritage site, you start creating job opportunities around it. You find that there will be even crafts around it, there will be some form of PFD, even in the rural area. It will not be in the level where it might have a grading, but there will be some form of a shebeen that now serves as a restaurant. People will go to the site and go, they know that they'll eat at this place. So you find that it's creating jobs and their businesses that are flourishing. It also provides diversifying the local economy around the site, but also increase opportunities for partnerships. Because once the site has been preserved, the community around the site who are in the management authority, they now know who is in the area providing what. So you find that there are partnerships between the Department of Arts and Culture, Department of Tourism, Department of Environmental Affairs, and the local community itself. And it starts attracting this interest in history and preservation. The heritage sites have they've got their own niche of tourists who would want to go and understand the battlefield, the battlefield, Blood River. Not everybody will go there, so it has that. But also it preserves local traditions and culture, and starts generating local investment and historic resources, and also building community pride in heritage. And on top of that, it starts increasing awareness of the site and this area of significance that might not be known before the site was declared. And the interest of tourism will also establish addresses issues related to poverty alleviation, and it also can revive traditions and restore cultural pride. We know that some of the food, the dresses, and the languages before they were told as barbaric. Now that the site has been declared, people will want to show now, I come from this area, this is who we are, what we dress, so that itself becomes part of the restoring of cultural pride, and it will lead to nation building and social cohesion. Now, the heritage of tourism approach is that it should balance between conservation and tourism, and there should be community consultation and participation. The involvement of stakeholders and business practitioners is critical when you look at heritage tourism. And in each and every heritage site, there should be a conservation management plan, because without it, there will be a problem. And also sometimes when a site has been declared, then you find that business people who do not have the heritage aspect in mind, whose idea is only for business, they just go and want to build chalets and everything around it, that might also take away the beauty of the area as a heritage site. So I think that's critical in terms of heritage approach. But also in terms of benefit, education and training becomes a benefit to the community, provides jobs. Once a site is declared, we expect that there will be economic development around the structure. It's going to promote cultural heritage. There will be economic spin-off for the community, and also improve livelihoods. And I think if we do that in terms of that, the tourism will be addressed in the national development plan itself. Challenges. I think the biggest challenge that happens around heritage sites is that we find that there are lack of coordination. one department will be the one involved and other departments are not involved. As a result, that means that there's lack of integration between conservation and tourism, where sometimes there is a history where it shows that in other countries, tourists will come there, they even take objects from the site themselves, and that might make the site lose its value. But poor promotion of material statistics are also a challenge, because when we're sitting, we cannot actually say there is increase in tourism because of the heavy site. People might be going to a place not at the site, but I think we need to see more of the statistics around the increase in tourism because of the site has been declared national or where it has been site. In conclusion, we believe that there is no tourism without our rich and diverse heritage culture. Therefore, if we work together, we will be able to reclaim, restore, and celebrate our living heritage. I thank you.
Thank you, members. Thank you very much. The last presentation from the Mayor Kumar. That will be the last presentation.
What's also important, I think most of you know that as well, is that the tourism industry has been growing faster than the average economic growth, which also matters. And it's been doing that globally as well as in South Africa. But I think here's a bit of the bad news. I think we need to appreciate that, especially if we talk about domestic tourism, for each one of us, the decision whether we're going to travel or not will depend on whether I've got money in my pocket or not. So the health of the economy, my ability to have a job or not have a job, whether I've got disposable income or not, whether I've got job security or not, even being in a job, will make me decide where I'm going to go, how much I'm going to spend, and whether I'm going to go at all. So I think it's important we try to link it. If you look at the rand-dollar exchange rate, what's that doing? And I think all of us are watching the news daily to see, I mean, are we above 10 rand to a dollar, or are we just below? I think we're just below at the moment. In IEC's opinion, in our forecast, we're here at the moment. We're saying it's going to go a little bit down, but we don't see a huge up and a further weakening of the rand, which is important, but we're also not saying that it's going to come down to the levels that we've had before. So that's important because for the foreigners, it means that we've got a window of opportunity where they think we are value for money destination, and we think in the next 2 years we should really abuse that position. But it's critically also for the South Africans, it's actually better to have a holiday here than try and go overseas. So both of those we actually work in our favor, and hopefully that can help us just to increase our rates, which we've not been able to do that successfully since 2008. Again, if we look at the prime overdraft rates at the lowest levels we've seen for a very extended period of time, which helps the consumer, it also helps the developers because you've got relatively low interest rates. We think it's going to go up a little bit over the next 3 years, but it does provide you with, let's call it, fertile ground for development. I think I'm going to skip this slide. It was focusing on what do the foreigners come to South Africa for? What are the niche? And maybe it's a bit of a broad utilization of the word niche, because these are big niches. And Mark spoke more clearly about different niches. I'm not going to speak about this one. Okay, then I think this slide, in my opinion, is quite important, because what we wanted to show you, and again, I think many of you know it, it's just maybe a different way to show it, which I think shows quite a stark reality. What is the supply that we currently have in the country? And what we've done is we've taken it over two main periods, between 2007 until 2010, and then the last 3 years, 2011 to 2013. And if you look at the total industry, in that period, we built, or we created another 1,600 units, which gives you a total, but I think it's more important to realize that the hotels created 4,300 new rooms, and there was consolidation in all of these markets. So even though the hotels grew quite substantially during the period leading up to 2010, the others already started closing. Being used for other purposes, going back to residential, I'm not sure. If you look at the next period, though, you could see the total industry created another 1,000 rooms, but way, not for hotels, or very little, 300 hotel rooms, and marginally for all the others. So very slow and cautious moves. Now the question is, what happened with that supply? What did we create from, let's call it, an economic benefit? And I want to start with this one. How many room nights did we actually sell again in those same periods, 2007 to 2010, and then 2011 to 2013? The total industry lost in that period 1.5 million room nights. So we sold less in that period. In the next period, we've gained almost the same amount. So in your mind, we're back to square one. Let's say we're back to 2007. If you look where it happened, the hotel industry, the hotels themselves lost 1.1 they've gained about 900.
So they're still behind.
Again, they're behind, but I think they're even more behind because there are now more rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones that had, I don't know what I'm going to get to, the occupancy level has come down and they haven't been able to catch up significantly. Another way to show it, what we've tried to plot here is the high occupancy, the highest ever was in that period, the lowest it ever was, and where is it currently, again for those categories. If we look at the total industry, and this is based on SAT SA figures, I'm going to show the ECR in the next slide, the high was just over 50%, for hotels it was about 55%, the low it went down to about 42%, quite dramatically lower, and I think as financiers we know it's very difficult to have a viable business if you're sitting at 42% occupancy. The good news is we're on the move up from an occupancy point of view. That's what the red triangle is trying to show you. So we, for a total industry, we know we're near the 50%, but we definitely not at that low anymore. Hotels seem to have moved a little bit higher. I mean, caravan parks, look how low that was, and now it's starting to creep up. That actually looks odd for 2013. Yeah, I'll check that. I think that's probably the high that it was at. Guest houses, interestingly enough, shows that it's back to the high, but again, if you look at the previous slide, there seems to have been a huge consolidation of guest houses. So there's many fewer beds on sale. So the ones remaining at least have seen a high increase in occupancy. So what do you take from that? I think on the one hand we can say a little bit of good news. It seems that we've bottomed out on low occupancy. If we look at rates, and here we use the STR, which of course is it's a cut of the industry. It doesn't represent all establishments like you would expect the SAT SA to be. I think it's more important to look at this one because this one takes out inflation, so that is on a real basis where are we compared to 2007, apologies. For the whole industry around 700 Rand then, we're roughly at 700 Rand if we took the same Rand value that we had in 2007. This one just gives the room rate on a nominal basis. So again, I think we've just caught our breath in a way. We now where we were before the crisis. We're slowly creeping up. Okay, so what do we do at the IDC? I think Christine has given a brief indication. We're a DFI like the DBSA. We've got a focus on many industries and tourism is one of them. Because it's a big part of the country's economy, it matters to us. So we want to make sure that we fund companies that are viable. It may not have to be an existing business, it can also be a new project, a new business that we create. But our mandate and our taxpayer says to us that we've got to prove that it's economically viable. And in order to prove that it's economically viable, we go through quite an in-depth due diligence process where we check the demand, we check the supply, we check your own capability of making that particular business work. I think maybe just an important line to remember, we want to lead in industrial development, capacity development. A lot of the work that Christine and the team would do is to come up with new projects. At the moment, we're definitely not swamped, and we're glad we're not swamped by new hotel projects or smaller guest houses, because we can do those as well. I think it's important that the industry catches its breath a little bit more, so our focus is more on trying to find those niches that you spoke about this morning. How do we create destinations? How do we create the demand? And then we can obviously rebuild the supply, but you've got to know that we're going to pull people towards certain areas and they're going to spend money there where before they may not have spent money there. So that's our role. I think I've covered what our purpose is. national growth development plan as well. And of course, in this sector, clearly aligned to National Department of Tourism and what they're trying to do. We try and match our efforts with that. Maybe a bit of bragging rights. We've been funding this industry for 20 years since 1993. I think we should have a small party. I didn't realize it was 20 years this year. If you count all the transactions that we funded over the period, roughly 5 billion rand, which is, I think it also matters. It is big. If you look at 14,000 direct jobs, maybe that sounds small, but I think we don't count as RDC the indirect jobs, and they are obviously in this industry. The tentacles stretch out very far and wide. Current exposure, just shy of 3 billion. And I think it's important, and nobody today has really spoken about the huge potential outside our borders. I know we're talking about domestic tourism, but I think if we look at our hotel operators or people involved in the industry, our market here is actually relatively small, but there's a whole continent with huge potential that we can tap into, and we can go into any country on the continent of Africa. Currently, we've got just above 1 billion outside our borders. I think just importantly also, I don't know how many of you would know of CEPA, it's not CEDA, as a colleague there is back. CEPA is the new amalgamated entity. It used to be Kula, and it used to be Samaf. They've been merged together, and they've become part of the RDC family, small enterprise finance agency. So where Christine can go anywhere from 1 million rand upwards, CEPA's mandate is, I think, 50,000 rand up to roughly the 1 million. So a lot of the larger projects that RDC may do, we're saying, please pull CEPA along. They must fund the smaller micro businesses, and of course they can do that in tourism as well. I just want to show you 4 case studies. I'm not going to go through them in detail. It's just what I think at the moment is interesting of the type of businesses that we funded. Mambedi, that's an example of a rural tourism business, 100% black owned. It's grown incrementally over a period of time. Premier Hotels is another type of example where we've found an entrepreneur that's trying to really grow and become the next, let's call it Protea or City Lodge, the next big player. Because you may have noticed in one of our pictures we're saying we want to also build black industrialists. So this is an example where, I mean, at the moment he's got 20, we funded 5 facilities, but he's got in his portfolio a number of tourism facilities, and he's going to keep on growing that until it's substantial in size. This one, in not too far from here, Bastion of the Deaf, where we've assisted a disabled grouping. I don't know if you know that there are, I think, 700,000 deaf people in South Africa that belong to this, deaf to the association. They have the land. They clearly want to make sure that they leave a better and more financially secure legacy for their constituencies. So they developed a tourism product around the land that they had, where they only had offices there, and we hope in time that this would be a very successful product. If it comes online, please support it. It's in Newton. And then this one talks to the niche, as you had mentioned earlier before. We're saying there's plenty of people, not only in South Africa, but in the world, that want to come to South Africa for adventure tourism. Kite surfing is one of them. Langebaan was a perfect location, lots of wind, stable waters, and therefore we facilitated a development with kite surfing school, some accommodation, but it's not that much about the accommodation, it's about the school, the supplies of kite surfing, etc. So again, it's leading up to summer, please tell your friends about it. What we're busy with at the moment that I think is of interest, the first one is a very interesting project which we're doing in partnership with the National Department of Tourism. I think many of you have said, and I wasn't here yesterday, but I'm sure that came up as well, somebody today said there are 8.5 or 9 million South Africans that can afford to travel. Within that 9 million, and maybe they're not traveling, but within the 9 million, there's a huge do don't know where they can go, and maybe more importantly, the facilities that we have don't really speak to that target market. So we, together with the department, looking at what's available. We're starting with government assets because I think it's many of the resort types that we can develop into a product that would suit that market. That would be close. We've got to take transportation, logistics, everything into account. And if anybody's got suggestions, please speak to us or through the national department. We don't know how big the project will be, but we're saying to really stimulate domestic tourism, this is one way of doing it. And it could be quite a significant project. This one, again, there's no accommodation there, but we say we've got national assets that are there for the picking. People do drive by or they do not drive by. If they do, they just go and view it. There's no way in which you can make them drop their money there. And really, that's how you can sustain these attractions, make it something that becomes economically viable, and then you can also include the community and get the benefits to them rather than being a parking or parking guide, and that's the extent of the benefit that they can get. The sidewalk and the cable car, both projects in Mpumalanga, and we're sharing the load there with the provincial tourism agencies. Often they may not have access to funding nor the means to implement such a project, but they sit on a fantastic asset that people may or may not know about. Babian's Kloof is similar in the Eastern Cape. Okay, I'm not going to spend too long about it. I think maybe two or three points why we think it's important that we do choose the IEC as a partner. It's definitely not a sales pitch. We take on projects that are riskier. We take on earlier stage projects, and I think most importantly, we've got a patient approach. If there's a hiccup in year two, we're unlikely to close the door. We're going to try and find a way in which to make that last and be sustainable. Okay, so let's go to see whether there's any good news or where the bad news angles may be. And here I've tried to look at the macro environment, not only in South Africa, but also in the world. We've used our research and information center to provide some of the forecasts. They've been proven often to be wrong, but lately they've been more right than wrong. So let's for the moment assume that they're right. If we look at the GDP growth across the world, so we start right at the world, these are over a 3 years of history and then a forecast for 2014 and for 2013. The world has been going down. This is annual growth rate. You could see all these bars, the last year, 2014, it seems to start to pick up. So there's a bit of good news there. If you look at the advanced economies, they're fairly pedestrian. Look how, 1% growth in the advanced economies, and of course those were our traditional source markets. If you look at the emerging economies, quite a different story. Even though it's gone down, you're talking about 5% growth expected for next year. Sub-Saharan Africa, that's substantial. This is on our doorstep. The markets around us are growing very fast. Look at South Africa. At least we higher than the advanced economies, but I would say marginally so. But there is an expectation between 2% and 3% for 2014. What's also important, I think it's going to show in the next slide, this is a bad news slide. In the last 6 months, we've, let's call it, downgraded our own forecast, and that's the difference between the blue bar, which were our forecast for the period in March this year. We've run it again in August, and you can see it. For the next 4 years, it's going to lag behind what we thought was going to be the position in March. While putting household consumption expenditure, I think it's critical for tourism that unless the households are, I can't say debt-free because that will never happen, but unless their finances are sound and in a way stable, it's going to be very hard to grow the domestic tourism industry. These are annual percentages in changes. just below 3%. It does go up, and I mean, in 2017, we're talking about 4%. That's important because that's the consumer that drives, that spends money. But it's lower than what we thought it would be 6 months ago. So let's hope in another 6 months we don't have another revised forecast that's lower. If you look at fixed investment, that's also important because as companies and the government spend money, that generates business for SMMEs, for your larger businesses as well. It gives you job creation, gives you disposable income. It really sets in motion an economy that works. If you look at private consumption expenditure, what I wanted to show you this is the total picture. Look how small services is if you look at the total. People are still spending on durable goods. Look, they're about 5% growth. They are still spending on semi-durable goods. It's actually increasing quite nicely. A decrease in non-durable and services, small but a little bit up. Look at this one. Again, all of us have got family or friends that don't have jobs or are in jobs and they're not sure whether they're going to be in the same job. They're not sure whether they're going to see an increase, even though we see strikes everywhere. The reality is a lot of people are in sort of flat growth jobs. The employment, and this is what we've taken, is let's assume beginning of 2008 the index was at 100. Where are we now after the recession? The total employment is the red one. We just caught up with where we were in 2007. Look who has created jobs. The social and community services. So that's really government creating jobs. Substantially so. The private sector is 95% of where they were in 2007. And I think we all say it's fantastic that there are jobs created in government, but the one that moves the economy a lot faster and with more kick is really your private sector. A little bit of good news, though, and that's why I put it in bold, even though it's really small there. In this period, jobs have obviously been lost. In catering and accommodation, we've at least seen since then some marginal job creation in our industry, about 50,000 jobs. These other ones have all shared jobs better. Again, that's why it matters in tourism. If I look at the fixed investment, and we're getting towards the end of the presentation, this really tells us, every bar here would tell us who's spending the money in their economy at the moment, who's busy with infrastructure development or whatever it may be. The private sector in these years were much bigger than anywhere else, and it was substantial. Look at how big these bars were. Government's the red one. 2009, 2010, 2011, negative terms. We're slowly starting to see this pick up. Obviously the public corporations, that would be your Eskoms, Transnet, huge capital intensive projects that they're busy with, which has an impact on the economy. So it's slowly going up. But of course, we want to see the private sector a lot higher, and we definitely want to see the SOEs, the public corporations, much bigger than what we currently see. And then the economic growth prospects. Again, this was our previous forecast in March. In August, we've tapered it a little bit down. For this year, just over 2%. That's way too low if we want to create a job and we want to get our youth employed. So where are their prospects for tourism? I think I've got two or three slides left. What we're saying, and there was a presentation yesterday on the Presidential Infrastructure Commission, that's really saying what do we need in the country with regards to infrastructure and how can we, in a coordinated way, make sure that these things happen. It would have huge benefits. So in our opinion, with those kind of projects, with the SKA, the Meerkat, all of those, the renewable energy specifically, the growth potential is not going to necessarily be in our generation supply. It's going to be in different areas. It's going to be the renewable areas are a lot of them here. A lot of them are here. Look where the PICCs are, because that's going to create potential for your SMMEs. There are needs for hotels in those areas. I don't know how many of you know that the one concentrated solar project in Uppington, we happen to be involved in that one as well. It's the highest high-rise building that the Northern Cape's ever going to have. It's, I think Sharon, what, 220 meters up in the air. This solid column. It's worth a visit. That's the type of attraction that us as just normal domestic tourism people must go and see. We've never seen anything like that in the country. So we must create that, because the renewable energy is the main purpose, but as tourism we can do something with it as well. We still, the WTTC still projects that our foreign tourist arrivals will be 4.6%, which is still higher than global growth. So that's still a tick. PricewaterhouseCoopers still says that will be 5% average annual growth, which is also important. Woolworths says the same. If you talk about the hotel managers, they are upbeat. They're starting to see, I think, the flat green patches coming through. So the last slide that I want to leave you with, of course we're going to have challenges if we talk about them first. Of course the individual and the families are still under pressure. They sit with much higher debt than they should be, and therefore they may think that they don't have disposable income to travel. We still have high unemployment rates. There's no doubt about that. We know that our companies are all saying, well, travel less. Can't you pick up the phone and have a conference call rather than travel? You have to go 4 days, maybe 2 days are enough. We all know those realities. But if you look at the opportunities, we're part of BRICS, which bring a lot of people to South Africa that otherwise may not have come here. The TIC infrastructure projects are substantial. They are going to happen. We still think that low interest rates will remain until at least 2014, so there is a window of opportunity. If you can prove that you've got a case, that you should actually take on that debt now. Very importantly also, I mean, I think you all know that if you want to build a hotel, the lead times are quite long. You get your marketing studies, you get all your QS reports in place, you have to do an EIA. By the time that you've built this thing, it's 3-4 years down the line. And I think what we must be careful of is that we don't miss another opportunity that we build too late, that we take too long to develop, and that we miss the cycle again. And I think on a short-term basis, the strong rand is in our own interest. It helps us. The foreigners think we're relatively cheap. We've got value for money. And domestically, we actually can't travel anywhere else but here. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And not much on this yet to discuss. I'm not sure our time is ready. Now in the serious race. How many people are going to contribute so that we might start to let's do this. We discover and come in some sort of recommendation so that we might kill these two benefits one stone, so that we might start to be at capacity by 12:30 in the city. We might see the hands, so that hands number one, stone number two, number three, number four, number five, can we take those 5 hands? Please attempt to be short and straight to your point and recommendation. Thank you very much.
I will be very short. I appreciate all the presentations that you've done. And I'm making an appeal to the tourism sector. This cannot be legislated. It cannot be policy. The biggest problem with our industry, and we need to address it as players, is simply the attitude of the people that are serving us. I mean, I'm staying in a wonderful hotel. I go there all the time. It is the Hotel High and Ice, over. I go there all the time. It's only our people in the service industry could give me the sort of service that I'm going to do, will go a long way in dealing with some of the problems and challenges that we have in the country. That is all we need. We need a change in attitude. It cannot be legislated, it cannot be policy. That's what we need to address in 7 years. The second thing that I would like us to work on, and it calls on us, the media calls on us, the IGC, and it was encapsulated in the PICC presentation yesterday, and it came up here. We all talk about what is wrong, and the biggest problem that we have in this country is our savings rates are too low. The IGC spoke about investment. In order to finance investment, we need to save more. Even the National Development Plan, there's no section that needs to save it. We need to save more in order for us to be able to invest. You require infrastructure investment to finance the money that the IDC uses or the DDSA borrows. That gets from saving. The more we save, the more we'll be able to finance the private sector that the IDC also highlighted is not investing. It is not investing yet. There is a bit of a problem in terms of call it an investment boycott, but that's because they have opportunities. But even when they do find opportunity, when the global recession begins to improve, or the global economy begins to improve, we will need to invest. But in order for us to be able to do that, we need to save. The Chinese are doing so well. They save 50%. The Singaporeans are doing so well. The people from the East, they save more. We need to do that as a country. Otherwise, we will not be able to achieve the employment growth that the President and the IDP, the NDP, came about. Those are my two comments.
Thank you very much.
I just want to comment briefly on that route tourism. The middle of the end that was mentioned, that I have to be on the board of that, but I think it's important to understand in any kind of route or any kind of region, if we're to develop tourism, whether it's local tourism or international tourism, there needs to be, in my view, serious collaboration across a number of partnerships. The middle of the end is actually membership-based, and the Vianda attempts to service its members in promoting what there is there to offer. And we've had to look at that on a number of occasions and reinvent what is there. It started off as a group of art practitioners who wanted to promote what they were doing wherever they were doing it. We're now finding that there are a couple of places along the middle of the Vianda which are becoming almost like shopping centers where people will go to Piggly Wiggly, or they'll go to the end of it at the junction or whatever, but they're not going out into the individual places. So it's moving, it's changing. And I think it's also important to work on the basis of research, who your visitors are, obviously where and who they are at this moment, and we need to talk about how to improve that. The partnerships I mentioned in the main discussion yesterday, for example, around the capture site, we've introduced the heritage element. But we've done it on a scale which we've already seen what it's doing to the Midland Meander, and people at the Midland Meander are telling us. For example, we worked with the NCTC, which is that main coal commission down between Johannesburg and Durban. They want people to come off the highway to rest, to recreate a little, before getting back on the highway so that they're refreshed and it reduces accidents and so on. So they're a big partner in supporting us to get people into the tourist route and onto some of those elements that are down there. And then I also think local knowledge of the people in the area is important. We talk sort of generally, but people know what's happening in their area. They know who's doing what, and the collaborations that take place are important to deal with. And then, just about finally, you need a champion or champions, someone who will take it and run with it and make it happen. Otherwise, it just becomes an academic exercise and nothing really happens. There are people who are prepared to get involved and push. Just one last thing, though, in terms of international tourism, we can't discount that, as you said. And we're finding in the Midlands Meander, where traditionally it was the route between Joburg and Durban, the schools in the area, and its appearances come down and so on, local communities who are beginning to assist, as you heard. But we're also seeing a lot of international tourists beginning to come into Vienna, and it's to do with the heritage. It's to do with something like the Nelson Mandela Capture Site, which has grabbed international attention. It's on the agenda of tour operators who bring people there. We see them coming in many buses all the time now. They found something to build into their tour and come into that area. And finally, Ongani and I were recently in Rio at the Museums International Council Museums Conference, triennial meeting. That's 3,000 delegates that come together every 3 years. And I was astonished to hear in the meeting we had recently at the Zico that the Department of Arts and Culture had said that they were unable to consider bringing this event to Africa, never been to Africa before, because their budget was spoken for until 2019. Now this event is in 2019, and it seems a completely mad thing not to be able to look at some cultural heritage tourism entity where you're bringing practitioners to your country to understand what is happening in this country, which obviously then gets pushed out later on. And I can't believe that we can't even get the support from our own department because their budget is spoken for 2019. I can't understand how that works.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Another presenter today and yesterday referred to the question of funding and particularly for the maintenance of tourism and heritage infrastructure. I've worked in the industry for the past 17 years, and I know of a number of sites that were declared by SARA and others that have potential to generate income as far as local economic development. But then the challenge of maintenance is key. And I would sort of like to that we support a recommendation that at least, because we cannot all most of the time go to the treasury for funding, because we know that the fiscal is very limited. Perhaps that would be important perhaps then to introduce this heritage league so that at least heritage is able to a degree to try to maintain those sites from its own income. But that's an idea that was put forward yesterday by I think the DG for Arts and Culture. But I think it's worth looking at.
Just a short recommendation is that all this wonderful research that is actually being done in the different areas should go back to those areas, and then the people in those areas should be consulted with, and those areas that can then grow. And there's lots of other NGOs that work in different areas that you can also pull information from, and so then you can build on a thriving little micro little economy. Thanks.
Firstly, I have to give my sincerest thanks because in the last 2 days, the opportunities that we've been given is more than we've had in our total history of the existence of the Cape Tourist Guide Association. So firstly, I have to give my sincerest thanks. One of the things that has happened is that just before the break, Professor Mazama and I had a short discussion in which we came to the conclusion that in her recipe which she put forward, yes, it's true, the glue isn't there, the dots joining is not there, and we're going to have dialogue and move forward to actually make the small enterprise more inclusive. The tourist guide is going to be more inclusive in her work going forward, and hopefully this will link in with one of the discussions that I had with Frans Verloon from Open Africa, and we've got a commitment that we're going to work forward because they are already in Africa revisiting the routes that they've had so much money spent on, which came to a point of handing over to the community because they have had community dialogue, they have had community members involved, but you know what our communities are like. Today, you've got a community leader, tomorrow, he disclose of the community and nobody recognizes him. These are realities that we work with and we have to embrace them. So we've got a commitment from Open Africa that we're going to move forward and we will make some models from this of revisiting these routes and offering the customer the choice to rather take a guided tour, or if they want to take an unguided tour, or different modes of transport. So we're going to move forward with this mindset. Without having been here today, we wouldn't have been able to have made this dialogue possible. In fact, Frans would have already forgotten that 8 years ago when he had just started in the business and he was a slim young man, without any gray hair, that we had actually had dialogue then already. Just two little points, if I may ask questions. The growth that we've got since 2012, how much of this can we attribute to the destabilized markets in other places in the world that have had business, tourism business migrate to us just because they're uncomfortable of the sense that they have there? And then another interesting thing that would perhaps be very conducive for our smaller markets is that, is there a trend or a shift, or have you been able to measure the stability in the hotels of keeping their business, and is there a shift to small guest houses and community projects and so on, or is there any statistic that can tell us, is there a new market that creates growth? Is there anything that can guide us in that way in what we're thinking?
Thank you.
Thank you.
In her remarks, the member of parliament actually talked about integrated planning. And I really would like to make sure that this is actually contained in the recommendations that will come out of this panel. And I don't think I have to make the case for it. It is long overdue. The government doesn't know where the Department of Tourism can wait or can work apart from the Department of Arts and Culture, and both can work apart from the Department of Local Government. It is just impractical. And now comes the time of service delivery. And we know for sure that there are all sorts of facilities in our local municipality structures that are governed by the municipality. And money cannot be actually given there because there are issues in terms of, you know, how, what are the instruments that one can actually use in order to make sure that this money is given through to NGOs that are doing good work, but because they don't belong to government. So all those issues. But I also believe that these kinds of interventions should be structured in such a way that we're able to look at what is strategic and what is operational and separate the issues. So that the time is not actually taken by actually looking at both. Because unless you understand what a strategy is, like the lady from the IDC was actually talking about the nodes of development. That's a strategic kind of discussion that we need to be running behind. And then we need to be crowding in support. There's absolutely no way that each entity will be able to do work on its own. Because things are over. We need to look at crowding in support, we need to look at crowding in partnership, we need to look at crowding in collaboration, we need to look at crowding in scale.
I see now another hand, my chairperson is the boss who just knocked on the door and just to get my comments for a traditional one. But let me give you this chance. Oh, one, two, three. Then you want to respond to
Thank you, chairperson. I just want to add on to the lady over there. With the department that tourism cannot operate without is the Department of Public Transport, or the Department of Transport rather. We will never be able to move people en masse around this country if we don't start, and we've been talking about this for how many years now. I think the IDC and DBSA should look at that, you know, that we should now start investing in public, making public transport more accessible and also looking at price. And then, of course, the issue of services. There's, of course, the soft services, but there's also hard services like infrastructure, very critical. And then also, Chairperson, I think the role of the Department of Education. If you influence the child at an early age, the child will influence the parents. And if you just take China, for example, kids, they are educated, you know, about their culture. They understand it from a very early age, and it becomes an embedded thing within them throughout their lives.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to reinforce the point the two previous speakers have said regarding integrated planning. when it comes to domestic and international tourism, these are very much connected. The two are connected. So if we can find ways of developing that linkage, so that when now, say, locals are traveling to neighboring countries, which is international tourism, if locally there are attractions which are, instead of just driving across to Maputo, at the same time, we can develop usage of facilities in the country. I think that would be quite important. And another linkage is between tourism and we promote it, what's happening to the environment. I think we also need to think about the connection so that we can achieve sustainable tourism.
Thank you very much. Just one thing was mentioned in regards to the differential pricing. National parks do it, but not on services, purely on access, to help fund the conservation efforts. So to me, the broader South African market still don't get to enjoy the conservation of the country. It's only quite a change. But we have to have some mechanism to do it. It's working in national parks. There's no reason why it can't work for other aspects in the country. I mean, it's really nice. Not for services, though. It should be for
the first one. If other members will have when you go to reporting the minutes, you can just go to that.
It's going to be very quick. I don't have an answer to either of those two questions. I think and we can look at it when we get back home. My sense is that if I look at the statistics, the guest houses have shrunk a lot bigger and with more impact than what you've seen the hotels shrunk. And the hotels have started to grow also faster than they have. I don't know if that provides you with some input.
Yeah, can I answer that growth on the guest houses?
Yeah.
Where there are mining, where there's mining activity, educational activity, that's a growth market, but where the guest houses are actually declining and slowing down is where these local municipalities are really charging exorbitant rates and taxes, and really, so they just can't afford to stay open anymore. So unfortunately, it's a declining market in the metropolis of Joburg.
Thank you very much. Because of time, if anybody can just keep you Allah by this, you with me, and let me thank you for being a good audience for this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And of course,
thank you.
I was saying, I don't know how much has ended up with you so far, and are you busy reviewing? Well, I've already worked on a presentation. I was preempting that it was going to happen. So, I've got to be just about ready.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
With your color coding, I'm colorblind. So thank you for compromise by actually doing the price very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Remember.
Thank you.
One
Thank you.
Okay.